This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
This is the most significant indictment in the history of the country. More significant than the prosecution of the Watergate conspirators or even the atomic bomb spies, because it goes to the heart of our democracy.
That's American University Distinguished Professor of History Alan Lichtman on the latest indictment of former U.S. President Donald Trump. Details coming up. Also, U.N. officials warn that hunger and displacement are spiraling out of control in Sudan, and Senegal is experiencing its largest protests in decades. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, in Sudan, the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs warns that hunger and displacement due to the ongoing war are spiraling out of control. More than 6 million people in Sudan, about 13% of the population, are now one step away from famine, according to the latest analysis from the Integrated Food Security Phase Classification. Mohamed El Amin, spokesperson for the UN World Food Program's East Africa region, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam that Sudanese are desperate for help.
The situation continued to deteriorate, and unfortunately, it even exceeded our expectations. We were expecting that around 19.1 million people would slip into hunger. However, the latest IPC results show that there are more than 20 million people who are facing the dangers of food insecurity. People are still suffering. People are forced to be displaced from Khartoum, while others are running for their life away from Darfur. We are still trying to catch up with the deteriorating humanitarian situation, and we've reached to more than 1.4 million people, and we continue to do more. However, with the fight ongoing, it's going to be very difficult, especially when you consider the access challenges that we are currently facing in areas like Khartoum and Darfur.
Because of the way things are, I imagine that it's very hard for people to get adequate access to clean water, that sort of thing, because so many humanitarians have moved out of the area because of the danger.
Yeah, this is particularly true for Khartoum and West Darfur, because they remain one of the two areas that are inaccessible. We've had few breakthroughs in Khartoum, but still there are areas that we are yet to access, and we could only imagine how bad the situation there. So right now, it's just very difficult to imagine what the people are going through with the conflict having an ethnic dimension.
Yeah, the Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs for the UN says it's really dire, that about 13% of the population are now one step away from famine. You're in Sudan. Mm-hmm. Is it that serious that people just are now dying from hunger?
It is really serious, and it's actually true that there are few millions of people that are one step away from facing a famine. And when you put into consideration that the planting season has already started and people are facing huge problems with the production inputs, things like the pesticides and even the seeds, it's very difficult to get. On top of that, you'll find that cash is very hard to get. There are fuel problems, and this endangers the planting season. And mind you that many of the Sudanese people, they depend mainly on agriculture. That's around 80% of the population. And in areas that have huge food insecurity issues, like the Darfur's, people depend on what they plant. They eat from it, and they save the rest for the rest of the season so that they can sell and eat from what they have. Now, with the planting season endangered, can't imagine how it's going to be.
That's Mohamed Lamine, spokesperson for the World Food Programme's East Africa region, speaking with VOA's Carol Van Dam from Port Sudan. Senegal is experiencing its largest protests in decades. Thousands of mostly young people have taken to the streets. Businesses have been looted. University students have pelted police with rocks. And the internet was shut down. At least 8 people have died. And one senior official described the country as being on the verge of an apocalypse. For the latest, I talked with our reporter, Alpha Jallo, who is right in the middle of the action in the center of Dakar.
Yes, the latest that situation is very precarious. Well, if you, for example, in the outskirts of Dakar, some of these places like Grand Yoke, Pekin, and of course, Tenge, there are still some running battles between security forces and young people who are very angry about Mr. Sonko's detention in prison. And they are still looting, as you have said, so many businesses have been vandalized. And of course, as you put it, the internet has been suspended and some social media platforms have also been suspended, like TikTok, because the government says that people are using TikTok, to use it as, as subversive means against the government. But also, but inside the city of Dakar, it is relatively calm. Since yesterday, there was no major demonstration in Dakar. You also mentioned about the university. Now, these demonstrations came at a time when the university was in holidays. So most of the students now, most of them have gone back to their villages, their towns. So around the university, I visited there today, but it is still barricaded with the police, and there are only few people, so you don't see the students are not, they are not there. So as of now, things are relatively calm in Dakar, but on the outskirts there are still some, demonstrations, some, spontaneous demonstrations here and there.
So Alpha, what are the demands of the protesters?
They only have one demand. Their demand is to release the main opposition leader, Mr. Ousmane Sonko, unconditionally and without any delay, because they said that this fighting is just starting. So if Mr. Sonko is not released unconditionally and allowed to participate in the forthcoming presidential election in February 2024, then this country, there will be no election in this country, and they may even make this country ungovernable. These are something that has been spread on social media everywhere, and they are determined, especially in Chikansor, in south and towns of Chikansor, where Mr. Sonko is the mayor, that place is still trouble, is breaking everywhere. Last night, some angry youth, stormed near the military military barracks, but the army, they were very cautious. They haven't used force against them. But things are still very precarious in many towns in Senegal.
And as you said, Alpha, businesses have been looted, the internet has been shut down. How does that bode for the economy of the country? The
economy is just experiencing a very, very difficult moment. Because here, if you come, even some banks which are located in the outskirts of Dakar, they are not operational. That means that those who want to, it coincides, at the end of month, many people will be queuing at the bank to get money. But even if the internet is suspended, it's very difficult for the bank to be able to be operational.
And lastly, Alpha, you are in the center of Dakar, very close to Mr. Sonko's, Ousmane Sonko's residence. Is the place surrounded? How does it look like from where you can see it?
But the place is very quiet. The street where he lives is very quiet because people are not very happy that he is in detention. His supporters, they are saying that, they will do everything possible to make so that Mr. Sonko will participate in the forthcoming election.
That was Alpha Jallo in the middle of the action. He talked with me from Dakar. The Wagner Group's main selling point in Africa has become its protection service for authoritarian regimes as well as elected governments, like in the Central African Republic, with supporters of the military coup in Niger carrying the Russian flag and Wagner's chief hailing the takeover. Some analysts say the mercenary group might be sought by Niger's new military leaders, who are defying African and international pressure to reinstate the elected president. David DeRoche, a professor of the National Defense University, discussed Wagner's in Africa and possible involvement in Niger with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi.
When we look at where Wagner operates, it has a couple things it looks for. It looks for, first, a corrupt and troubled government. It looks for a government that resists human rights reforms, resists Western standards of conduct in exchange for Western security assistance. And it looks for a country that has some sort of raw material that can be exported by Wagner to pay for itself. So, you know, Niger is one of the world's leaders in uranium. It's an incredibly corrupt country. I think it's ranked like 123 out of 170. Mali is ranked 137 out of 180 in terms of corruption. Mozambique is ranked 142 out of 180 in corruptions. So all of these countries are just ripe for Wagner's involvement. It's basically the arrival of Wagner is sort of the trumpet call of the arrival of the status as a failed state.
Mali became more dependent than ever on Wagner's forces, however, focused far more on securing access to Mali's gold mines. The 1,000 to 2,000 Wagner contractors have not been particularly effective in suppressing the jihadis in Mali's north. And in fact, from counterinsurgency and counterterrorism perspectives, their brutality has backfired. However, the junta in Mali has no immediate alternative. What's your take on that?
I mean, what happened was, I think you're starting to see the Malian government turn into a factional government. And I think that after years of Western support, you know, they realized that a counterinsurgency is a very difficult, manpower intensive, and painstaking operation that requires a great amount of discipline to basically win over a population that may or may not be aligned with you. But if you just want to go and kill people in, you know, among who are the rebels, then that's something that's more easy to do. And that's what Wagner offers. So, you know, the coup leaders in Mali were tired of people saying, look, you need to reform. You have to be responsive to your civilian government. You have to win people over. It's much simpler for a marginally trained armed force to just decide, no, let's go out and take care of this problem. Let's punish these people, teach them a lesson. That's where Wagner excels. But what the regime fails to overlook is that they embed themselves commercially. And eventually, if there's a conflict between the commercial interests of Wagner and the government interests of the government, it's quite possible we'll see Wagner engaging in overthrowing that government. So it's sort of a deal with the devil, but they have a simplistic appeal, which in these corrupt, ethnically factionalized states is attractive.
The intensifying U.S. sanctions on Russia's Wagner's group in Africa and the Middle East have hampered its operations, but have not eliminated them. The Wagner Group has sent mercenary deployments to Syria, Libya, Mozambique, Mali, and the Central African Republic, on top of Sudan. How serious is the threat of Wagner's expansion to African security and stability?
It's a huge threat. What Wagner does is reinforce the patterns of instability in Africa. Africa has problems because of corruption. Africa has problems because of ethnic factionalism. Africa has problems because of military involvement in government and because of outside control of resources. All of those existing problems, which are the baseline of tensions in Africa, Wagner exacerbates. So the longer you have Wagner in there, you know, the faction that's in power will welcome the fact that they get weapons, firepower, and trained mercenaries without any judgment, without any call for reform. But the underlying conditions that lead to instability in Africa, to include security instability, are exacerbated by Wagner's presence. So I would argue that these ruling cliques will get a short-term gain. They may get a gain that they see, you know, as viable for their faction, but the stability of their countries and the stability of Africa in the long run are undermined by Wagner in a profound way that we've yet to fully appreciate.
That was David DeRoche, a professor at the National Defense University, speaking with VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi. You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Wahib in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Thousands of people rallied today in Niger's capital, Niamey, in support of the coup that toppled the democratically elected government as security concerns mounted among Western nations. The demonstration was called to mark the anniversary of the West African nation's 1960 independence from France. Timothy Donangmai, the chief of VOA's French to Africa service, tells me that protesters were brandishing giant Russian flags and chanting anti-French slogans.
Yes. One must point out that today is National Day in Niger. It's the 63rd anniversary of Niger's independence from France. So on this occasion, many people went out to express their support to the coup leaders. Some had Niger's flags, others carried Russian flags and were screaming anti-French slogans. And so this is a trend that we've seen since the beginning of this coup in Niger. More and more people in that country are coming out in support of the coup leaders.
The protests comes as Western African military chiefs are meeting in Nigeria's capital, Abuja. And ECOWAS team also is talking about this whole thing in Niger. Basically, you think these side talks in Abuja and one ECOWAS team talking in Niger will come up with some kind of a result to bring back, to reinstate Bazoum, who remains under house arrest?
It's not likely to get Mr. Bazoum back to power because yesterday, in an address to the nation, military leader General Abdourahmane Tiani denounced those who condemn the coup, and he also called on people in Niger to come out and defend Niger's democracy. So I don't. It's hard to see the military leaders give up their power and relinquish their power in favor of President Bazoum. Now, the ECOWAS and ECOWAS military leaders are in a tough spot. They said a military intervention would be in last resort, but you have Burkina Faso, Mali, and Guinea who came out in support of the coup, and the latest country is Mauritania. So we see two camps emerging in West Africa about this coup, and this has not been seen before, so this is a very tough situation.
Where does, I'm just curious, Timothy, where does that hate for the French comes from? Because like you were saying, people were brandishing giant Russian flags and chanting anti-French slogans at the demonstrations.
The anti-French feeling was born out of the perception that the former French colonies among the least developed countries in the whole world. You have countries like Niger, countries like Chad, Central African Republic, the poorest of the poorest. Yet those countries have resources. Like Niger has been exploiting uranium for years, but France has been the sole buyer. The French company is the one that has been exploiting that uranium. And people in Niger feel that they are only receiving a meager part of the revenue generated by that uranium. So that's on the economic side. On the political side, people in French-speaking Africa think that France has been propping up corrupt regimes for years, has been tolerating those regimes. And what made it worse was France's support for the coup in Chad. You know, General Mohamed Idriss Déby Itno succeeded his father in spite of the constitution that said that it should be the speaker of the National Assembly. So all that is fanning the flames of anti-French resentment in West Africa.
And lastly, Timothy, as tensions mount, Britain and the United States have announced they're pulling back embassy personnel as a precaution. Anything on that front that you can report to us?
On that front, President Joe Biden called for the immediate release of President Mohamed Bazoum. The United States has been very careful with regards to this Niger crisis. It has yet to qualify it as a coup, officially at least. So everybody involved is in a very difficult situation, be it the Western countries or the African countries, West African countries, or the coup leaders in Niger themselves. So it's a very tricky situation.
That was Timothy Donangai, the chief of VOA's French to Africa service. In about 2 hours, former President Donald J. Trump is due to appear in the U.S. Federal Courthouse in Washington, D.C., steps away from the U.S. Capitol building, where hearings were held a year ago to hold those accountable for trying to stop the peaceful transfer of power from one president to the next. This is Trump's third indictment since March. He was charged with 4 counts of allegedly trying to overturn the 2020 election. Presidential historian and distinguished professor of history at American University, Alan Lichtman, tells VOA's Carol Van Damme, this is the most important indictment in U.S. history.
I believe he will be convicted at least on some of the counts. And as an historian, I got to put this in a bit of perspective to tell you that this is the most significant indictment in the history of the country, more significant than the prosecution of the Watergate conspirators or even the atomic bomb spies, because it goes to the heart of our democracy. If, in fact, he is convicted of some or all of these charges, it will prove that Donald Trump was a clear and present danger to the survival of our democracy. That, you know, that coup that he organized came this close to actually succeeding in overturning democracy here. And that would threaten democracy everywhere, because democratic nations depend upon the leadership of the United States. You know, democracy is precious, but we must remember that, like all precious things, it can be destroyed.
You know, we're hearing different things because this is uncharted territory. What about the question of if he is convicted on any one of these or all charges, is he still allowed to run for president?
He absolutely is still allowed to run for president. He could even run for president from jail. We have a precedent for that. The socialist candidate Eugene Victor Debs ran for president from jail in 1920 and got over 900,000 votes. Kind of ironically, Debs was jailed for violating the Espionage Act, one of the charges against Donald Trump in the national security case down in Florida. And Debs was charged for something much less serious, basically speaking out against the government in World War I, not endangering our national security by stealing and mishandling national security documents.
So he's just hours away from his expected court appearance. How does it affect or impact the case of what Special Counsel Jack Smith is making against him? How is this going to possibly impact other countries where there have been dictators and coups? And some of them, I think, take a page from watching the United States and watching this unfold. So what do you think of all that?
Absolutely. You're 100% right. This case has worldwide significance and implications, because the United States, you know, has been the leader in worldwide democracy. And, you know, I understand in a court of law, Trump is innocent until proven guilty, but we're not in a court of law. We're all entitled to our own opinions. And I do believe that Trump did, in fact, quite intentionally attempt to disrupt the peaceful transfer of power, which has held for over 200 years in this country. And he did so not for any principle, but simply to personal reasons, simply to keep himself in power. And if Trump is not held accountable for his actions, in my opinion, this will have a dramatic, reverberating negative effect on democracy everywhere in the world.
That was Professor of History at American University, Alan Lichtman. He was speaking with VOA's Carol Van Dam. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Nicole Peters, and our engineer, David Greenberg, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.